Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts, and please rate and review the program. I'm your host, William Liu. Blake Murphy, for the third week in a row, I know he's feeling weird about this, 3 weeks in a row, not working, not talking to a microphone, not obsessing over every tiny little detail in a Raptors-Hornets game. So we continue to have a rotating panel of co-hosts to join us. And so for today and for tomorrow, we have Samson Folk, Raptors Republic, friend of the program. You've been on at least 5 or 6 times now on the Raptors show. But Samson, I appreciate you, man. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Sam. Oh, we got the drop. Yeah, that's nice to see. That was actually Blake had proposed that when I initially took over the Raptors Republic podcast from you, Dave Chappelle. I want to talk to Sam. I'm doing well, basically, though, and happy to be on. Thank you for allowing me to co-host.
As I tell everybody who has done this, and everyone keeps saying thank you, it's a huge favor that you're doing for me. So, if anything, I owe you. Like, I should get you lunch or something. But
we could arrange that or something like that. But I get it. It's like offloading work is one of the true pleasures of life, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, listen. You and I both offloaded a little bit of work last night after sports. per sources, it was quite limited, sparsely attended by media in the upper bowl. Maybe in the lower bowl, maybe there were more. I know you typically sit in the lower bowl.
Yeah. Is that where's the grinders? Is it upper bowl is the grinders or lower bowl is the grinders?
You would think the upper bowl is the grinders, but realistically, not to snitch on people, but like half the people up there aren't doing any work.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a good place to take in the game.
It's absolutely a great
place to
take
it. But it was a good game yesterday.
Yeah,
it was. To be quite honest with you. Like, I enjoyed the process. I didn't watch it from the inside the arena, but, you know, it was a fun game with some fun, I don't know, schematic stuff from the Raptors, some fun performances from the Raptors. Yeah. And every game is a little bit less fun now because there's no Scotty. But there were things to like.
For sure. Okay, let's get to that game. Raptors beat the Hornets last night. 111 to 106, Gary Trent Jr. misses a free throw to make us all sweat, and then he steals the ball. I love Gary's steals. They're just like, just clamping, ripping you, and then goes the other way for a dunk. Raptors win last night against the Hornets. I mean, look, the Raptors are obviously having a tough season, and they're down bad, and they lose Scotty over the weekend, and then they lose Jakob on top of that, at least for the second half of last night's game. But they still had a couple players. They still had Quickly. They still had RJ, you know. Those two guys played really well. I saw you tweeted that it's really fun to see those two guys lead and generate a lot of offense. We'll have a bigger discussion about RJ, but what did you make of those two players who primarily were the driving factors leading the Raptors to victory?
I thought that the Hornets did Emmanuel a very big favor by blitzing him.
Okay.
And I think that Emmanuel took that response and made good on it. And I think it was really nice because, as we've kind of talked about, Emmanuel has had kind of dwindling efficiency as a scorer in the pick and roll. He's been more effective as a passer, and Jakob Poeltl is a really effective short roll passer. So is Kelly Olynyk. So if you're going to send two to the ball on Emmanuel Quickly, it automatically triggers a response where you can make that easy lob over to Jakob or Kelly.
Right.
And then you're playing in these 4-on-3 situations where if you have a decent playmaking big, you have willing cutters on the wings, the Raptors find themselves in advantageous positions to score. And while the half-court offense on the whole last night was not good, and I think they've only had 3 above-average half-court offensive performances over the last 18 games since Pascal got traded.
Great.
It's not going super well, but they've been heavier on the offensive glass. They've been able to do some stuff, and this is about growth.
Mm-hmm.
So to see Emmanuel Quickly kind of take that heavy defensive response, provide what he can, and then they score out of it, it's nice. It's good to see.
Yeah, Quickly last night, to your point, 11 assists. Mm-hmm. This is already 5 games of him with double-digit assists with the Raptors. This is a different role to be the lead guard for the team now.
Assist farm here, too.
Yeah. You don't feel like they're a little inflated, do you?
They're super inflated, man.
There you go. All right, go ahead.
It's an assist farm. Like, I think it started with Dennis, and I know Dennis is, like, friend of the show. I don't mean to be anything on Dennis.
Oh, that's fine.
The Raptors have this thing where they make, like, a pass, and there's, like, 4 seconds of fill, and then a shot is made, and there's an assist.
Yeah.
They're juiced right now.
I guess we could compare Raptors' home assist versus their away assist, and then I guess regress that against, like, what teams typically do less on, like, perform less on the road, but that's an interesting one because, it does feel like whoever's running point guard for the Raptors, it's partially also the system. probably as well. But in any case, it was good, as you mentioned, that he was able to at least identify and read and play out of those blitzes. And Darko actually had a clip about it, just urging Emmanuel Quickly to continue to make the right reads going forward. So here is that clip from postgame.
That was part of our conversation that I had with both Quickly and RJ before the game. You know, don't think that you gotta do more now when Scotty is there, that you gotta, you know, take more shots necessarily. You guys are both great, great players. You're gonna get your shots in the game. Just allow it to come naturally and make sure that they have a good ball movement and they're playing together. They are reestablishing its identity, you know, I don't know how many times this year or now, but that has to be that has to be our identity, that we move the ball, that we play together, that we play off of each other. And I thought for the big part of the game, we did a good job outside of those 14 turnovers. So hopefully next game, he has 10 assists and zero turnovers.
Yeah, so Quickly and RJ both drove a lot of the offense last night. RJ finishes with 5 assists. 10 of 15 shooting for RJ. I mean, the three-point shot is... Do you believe in the RJ's three-point shot?
Not. I think he's like 40% as a Raptor.
Yeah.
I don't believe in it to that degree.
Okay.
I believe he can be serviceable between like, what, 34 and 37% depending on the year or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest change for RJ, which we'll talk about later, is obviously the rim pressure, mm-hmm. the driving efficiency, and the finishing at the bucket. The three-point shot, I don't know. The mechanics don't sell me on it. The numbers would have to be so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's guys like Tyrese Haliburton who has this really crazy shot. And those types of guys, they have to prove
that was
it
part
being,
of our
you know, a little bit less dynamic. They have to prove it more often with, like, larger volume, higher percentages. And RJ, it doesn't sell me on it currently. But yeah. I'm glad to see it.
I mean, this is where I always talk about this, but you do the same thing. Go early to the game. Watch them warm up.
Yeah.
Go through their routines. There's certain guys where, like, it's inconsistent in warm-ups. So, like, I don't understand how you're shooting and performing Precious. At a higher level.
Precious. He was a really big one. He'd airball all the time.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
Grady, honestly, at the start of the season, I was like, oh, I don't know. And then as the season's gone on for me, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10.
Who's the biggest, like, prove-it guy that was beating the allegations of, like, the pregame warm-ups?
Pascal had a real inconsistent, like, and whatever. I wouldn't say, like, Pascal was, like, a knockdown shooter, but mm-hmm. he would, I don't know, whether it was focused. Scotty has a little bit of that as well, you know? Like, he will miss a lot in warm-ups, but in the game, I feel like he's focusing in. I mean, he started slowing down a lot post-Pascal trade as well. But, yeah, RJ is definitely one of those guys for me. I mean, the free throws, I continue to not understand why he continues to smoke free throws.
Yeah, and like 61%.
I think it might be even lower than that now for the Raptors, but he just continues to have these nights where it's like he'll miss both, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's certain guys where it's like you'll miss the first one and then you'll just make the second one. That's always a Jakob thing for me. But I understand with Jakob because he's shooting one-handed free throws. RJ, I don't know. I would love to see him. I'd love to see him more because, again, as you mentioned, the core of what he's doing is really good already.
Yeah, there's a lot of flick on his jumper, you know? And he, like, loads it really low. He gets it here. I don't know. Drew Hanlon worked with him when he made that first big jump from, like, year one to year two.
Interesting.
And I think he shot, what, 38% or 39% in year two. And then, obviously, it's been dipping since then. But I'm just glad to see him take, like, open looks with the Raptors. Yeah. And hopefully the response is something we saw Scotty develop over the course of the season, which is you start developing, like, longer and longer closeouts as a response from the defense. But as far as, like, am I sold on 40%? Absolutely not.
Fair enough.
Not to be a hater. But
no, it's fine. Another big topic from yesterday was just who's going to replace Scotty Barnes in the starting group. As we move forward into this new period of the season, which they get a little bit sadder without Scotty available.
Yep.
If you haven't heard already, he broke a finger in his hand. And so Ochai Agbaji was the one who ultimately stepped in and filled in for the starting group. Bit of an interesting stat line. You don't see him take 20 shots. He's not that type of player. But 6 of 20 from the field for Ochai Agbaji. Did hit the glass hard. 4 offensive rebounds, 9 rebounds overall. 2 blocks, including a really nice block. And then I think he got the pass back from Kelly and took it the length of the court. A little hesitation, and then got past his man. Finished at the basket. What did you make of Ochai filling in for Scotty in the starting group?
I think that Ochai... field, he did, like, the very first play that he scored on, he was like a facsimile of Scotty. And basically what happens is when Ochai goes to set that screen for Emmanuel on ball, it puts the Raptors in a position, okay, what is the defensive response? The Hornets play it really high, which means that if Ochai slips, he gets below the level of the bottom defender and can create a steal. Raptors fans, we've been watching Scotty seal players and create these post-entry passes all season long. It's a great play. Ochai does that quickly, immediately, like automatic read to Jakob to create a different angle for the post-entry. He does that. That's like great that Ochai can, with his motion, and like he's pretty muscular frame out there, kind of fit in that way. But as far as like 20 shot attempts, 6 of 20, and the volume was insane, man. He looked really overextended as like an on-ball creator. The jump shot, 1 for 7 from downtown, obviously didn't work out well. The hustle is there.
The hustle is there, for sure.
I like that the hustle is there. And defensively, it made sense to be guarding like Brandon Miller and Miles Bridges late.
No, I mean, they certainly need his defense, right? I mean, because when you're replacing Scotty, it's like you got to replace like so many different roles, so many different parts. And Ochai, he's not much like Scotty at all.
No.
I'm trying to make it a little bit better. But I think in his performance in particular, I mean, I'm not going to justify 20 shots, but did you have any exception with any of the 1 for 7 from three? Like, those were mostly open catch and shoot looks.
No, I think basically he's in – the Raptors aren't that good of a team. Ochai came over here to, like, get more out of his game.
Yeah.
And he's a very willing cutter, and the Raptors are a team that very willingly moves the ball. It's going to find the open player.
Yeah.
If this team were good enough, then you could kind of, like, turn your nose up at Ochai attempted threes, but they're not good enough for that. You have to see, have to get the extra legs out of Grady's game. You got to get it out of Ochai's game, Emmanuel's game, RJ's game, and Scotty when he was healthy. You just got to see about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, I the reason I asked you, because like when I watched the back, it was like, I didn't think that any of them were like contested shots where he's not like stepping back and taking really bad ones. There was a stretch in the third quarter, he missed two wide open ones, and he still took the third one, and he knocked it down. Now, whatever, I'm not saying 1 for 7 is good, but you know, those weren't bad shots to me. He also crashed the glass a couple times and tried to tip it in a couple times, missed a couple tip backs. So, you know, it looks bigger on the field goal percentage, you know, in terms of the total, but those weren't necessarily bad ones. You would just liked it if he had converted. I think for me, it was just a couple times, especially in the fourth quarter, he got the ball swung to him and he had to make a decision off the bounce. And that's where I was like, ah, you're picking up your dribble and it's like you're taking off from like the dotted circle and you're trying to stretch to a layup. Or, I mean, he got blocked by Davis Bertans. He kind of like, it was a play where they inbounded to him and it was, I think the first action they wanted to give the little, you know, either triple handoff or cut for Grady, who cut to one side of the floor. And the Hornets defense actually did a great job denying the catch to Grady. And so instead of Ochai resetting the offense to quickly, who's at the top of the floor, he's like, okay, whatever, the first action will work, it'll get back to me, work pick and roll. He was like, no, I'm going to do like a little fake it, keeper play, and then I'm going to take it strong against Davis Bertans, which I'm, okay, fine, I guess he's not a strong defender, but he is bigger than you. And Ochai did try to do that against him. And maybe he could have stretched his way to a lefty layup. It would have been more difficult. He would have had to really stretch. And again, he took off from pretty far out, but he went back to his right hand and Bertans just completely stuffed him. And I'm like, look, if you're getting stuffed by Davis Bertans, like you got to make, you know, more conservative choices offensively.
Well, he was at his best. Like half of his makes were just the result of being an active cutter. You know, we detailed and basically diagrammed through the audio what he did on his first score of the game. But the other two scores were just like short roll situations where Jakob is able to, and Kelly is able to dictate that they get a rotation to the middle of the floor. And Ochai just cuts from where his defender left him. One for that big lob where he did dunk on Bertans and he got stuck in the middle. Awesome, super athletic feat.
Perfect. Yeah.
That'll be in his like highlight mix for his career. Hell yeah. You want that play as often as possible. And the other one, he just cut from the opposite corner. But that was half of his makes.
Mm-hmm.
That was 3 out of the 6 out of the 20 attempted shots. And yeah, he was overextended with a live dribble, which I think we're going to see happen to quite a few players by design for these Raptors as they try and like exist without OG and then Pascal and then Scotty. Like, guys just have to be willing to try more things. So the volume is an indicator that like, hey.
He's trying. He's participating. It. Yeah. He took 20 field goals last night and he made 24 total passes.
Yeah.
Which is.
That's an awesome stat.
That's rare to do. I thought Jakob played really well in the first half. Organized the team, played good defense, screened, short rolled, got guys in and out of difficult situations, played pick and roll, allowed quickly to get going. And then, unfortunately, he leaves right before half with a dislocated pinky. Hopefully, he's able to play going forward because I mean, if you don't, I mean, the Raptors, I guess they do have Jonte, and we saw Jonte a little bit yesterday. They still have Kelly, who they slid into the starting role. I don't know. Jakob might be their, like, their best player right now in terms of, like, the biggest floor raiser.
He's so important because there is – you want to walk that fine line because obviously the Raptors, what they want to be this season as a team has changed. Mm-hmm. Expectations have changed.
Absolutely.
And there's some – like, there's a return in the NBA in being bad that you might get a better pick, all that kind of stuff. But you don't want to fall so far down that, like, the type of basketball you're playing – returns so little in terms of, like, impact and value in the reps you're getting. Mm-hmm. And Jaka being out there just as, like, a good screen setter, a guy that they go to in their delay action to make progressive reads, and we talked about the short roll, him being an important piece there, he helps connect together good basketball plays.
Yes.
And if you're just out there vibing, we've seen, like, Raptors fans for a long time have laughed at other teams in that dysfunction, like, oh, you guys are never getting out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. You have to be bad to get a good pick, yes, but you also want to play productive basketball.
Yeah.
And Jakob is so pivotal, so imperative to playing productive basketball that I don't know how long it took for them to, like, locate that pinky back in. I don't know what the recovery situation is, but he's very important.
He is incredibly important. He plays competent basketball. He plays with the system. I think this is honestly why the Spurs, like, obviously, they were willing to move off of Jakob, and the Raptors met their price ultimately. And we don't have to go over, like, whether that was the right decision from the Raptors or
it's
not.
A big price.
It's been talked to death. We know it wasn't the right choice, and this is why the Raptors can't control their own pick right now. And maybe for the foreseeable future if they retain their pick this year. But, like, he provides the structure, as you mentioned, that a lot of young players do need somebody to play off of. And I feel like if he's not available, I do feel really badly for Quickly in a way because he's probably the guy that's most impacted by this. But, of course, whatever. I mean, I don't know. The next matchup against the Pelicans is also terrible. It's just like they have so much size. And it's like Jakob is probably the only guy you can throw against that size unless you really want to start two bigs, which I really don't want to see the Raptors do that. But
it's also, just
please stay healthy, Jakob. That's all.
Who is going to be there when Zion, like, turns the corner? It's like a big question.
Well, they had Jakob guarding Zion last time, and I
would prefer him in a help role.
Me too.
Yeah.
Who's our Rui Hachimura? So AD, he can be the AD sliding over on Jokic.
It's probably like Ochai again. Or,
oh, God. All right.
Because Ochai is probably going to start again.
Yeah. And I think, by the way, he should continue to start, right? Do you agree with that?
I'd rather Grady starts.
You'd rather Grady start?
Yeah.
Defensively, then, that's a lot on everybody.
But, like, it's the whole court. And I think Grady getting reps is really important. And I'd like Grady to start, and then you can go towards like 30 minutes per game. If he's gassed, he's gassed. I get it. But Grady has a pretty good sense of where to be defensively, which means that he can exist out there if he's not put in like the grinder, in the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And the Pelicans, they probably would to some degree.
They got a lot of
every team is going to do that to some degree. But also, like, I don't know. He's going to have to be out there at some point in time. And these Raptors are not – they did beat the Hornets, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not out here to, like, win every game, maximize every game plan. Some of it is development. So, I would rank Grady above Ochai in terms of, like, who do you want to see more out of? And who's, I don't know, high-end outcome matters more.
I hear that. But you also just made the good point about Jakob being really important to the Raptors still playing competent basketball. And I'm not saying that, like, it's going to be that much of a drop-off to go from, like, Grady to Ochai. But I don't know. I felt like Grady, especially the way he started the season, and he had another good game last night. The Grady Dick stat line came in at 11 points, 4 of 7, 3 of 5 from 3. We'll talk about him as well after this break. But just in general, I feel like he started the season so, like, in such a weird place. And he got really, you know, one down to the G League. Didn't even perform well at the G League level, quite honestly.
He's bad there.
And then he came back, and he's found his rhythm. I'm, like, almost a little cautious to be like, all right, you're in such a comfortable place right now. You come off the bench. You're succeeding. Let's just, like, let's stay in this comfortable place. And, of course, if you're playing really well, we'll just extend some of your minutes off the bench.
Right.
That's for me. But I'm more of a cautious person. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here.
You're a cautious guy?
I'm a cautious guy, yeah. I'm pretty – I'm not saying I'm conservative. I'm definitely not conservative. Right. But, like, yeah.
You don't want to put that
– To be very clear.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that
I just don't want him to, like, fall back into a lull. You know what I mean? Like, I want him to finish out this rookie season strong.
there's definitely, it seemed like he already hit a rookie wall. You don't want him to hit that second wall, maybe. I guess there's some,
yeah, I suppose, yeah.
There's some wisdom in that. And there's, you know, this is something that coaches always have to worry about, that like pundits like ourselves, we can say whatever we want, but there's really no impact on the player. A coach might be worried about like protecting Grady and like putting him in the right spots and not overextending him. And he might be seeing things, like Darko might be seeing things, and Pat might be seeing things in practice where they're like, oh yeah, we don't want to put Grady out here. But I don't see practice, so I'm like, I don't know, just give us minutes.
No, that's fair.
That's probably my point of view, which could, I guess there's not like, could be a little bit takey. But yeah, I would like to see as much Grady as possible going forward.
That's fair. He was also very fun to watch last night. He's going to do even more and more off the bench. I suppose, especially with Scotty getting injured now, that moves Noir back into the group. If Jakob misses more time, that moves, you know, Jonte Porter back into the group. And the Raptors seem to be committing to this DJ Carden at backup point guard thing, because, again, if you're replacing Scotty, he was playing backup point guard for you as well.
Wait, let me ask you, do you know anything as to why Carden, like, leapfrogged JFL?
No, I don't. I don't think he was playing that much better than him, let's say that, in the G League. But I think the only thing with JFL is just like, and he did get, you know, converted into a standard contract. So congrats to Javon. I think, yeah, he's primarily playing as a scorer, not necessarily as a point guard.
Sure.
But I don't know. I mean, it's not so important for me to like table set so much as like if you can bring other skill sets in addition to that. And I don't think that it's fair to bring in a guy who was kind of a combo guard, plays like a combo guard, and you're like, yeah, but the problem is you're not a point guard. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I don't think DJ Carden necessarily is like a traditional point guard either. But regardless, like those are the three guys that played for the second unit last night. Is there anything intriguing you from Wara, Carden, or Porter?
I think honestly, as far as like if I were ranking between like Wara, Agbaji, Grady is like the inflection point of, he's interesting, provides a certain level of impact, and you're looking at a certain level of upside. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to play, I think the best player right now of Agbaji, Grady, and Wara, I think it's Wara probably, as far as like what a guy can do on the floor. And I know Abaji's bona fides on defense are a little bit better than Wara's, but I think Wara's utility offensively, especially look at a Raptors team, as we said, in the last 18 games, only three above average half court performances. Wara can do a lot of stuff. He can connect a lot of those like initiation plays. And in a game where like RJ was impressive but was overextended at, you know, five turnovers, in a game where quickly did get to 11 assists, but like over like either half or over half of them came in transition, they want to connect like the middle play, like the first play, maybe it doesn't work. The first action doesn't work in the half court. The second action, what makes it dangerous? Like Wara on ball or Agbaji on ball? And I think Wara would, like, elevate a lot of the in-between stuff offensively. So I hope he gets more minutes. And DJ, I have to see more film on him, but...
You have to see any film on him, let's be honest.
No, what, like, just, like, watching him with the Raptors, and then, like, you go into, like, the three videos you can find of, like, his G League highlights, right? And that's like, oh, he's making shots. But he seems pretty slick on the inside of the arc. And the problem with all these, you know, G League guards is that you wonder, can they create these big defensive responses to them to where they give other players advantages? Or are they like just that level of shot maker that they can bring it to the league right now? And I don't know if I have any indication that he's that level of guy currently. But
have you seen more of JFL?
Yeah, definitely. Because I saw him at Summer League and I watched like a lot of his Windy City Bowl stuff because I was like, oh, he's going to be part of the team. Whereas DJ, you know, we were wondering, it kind of sprung on us. And then just like early season, preseason JFL, some of JFL during this season. My lean is that JFL is a better player, but DJ is probably better defensively, which matters maybe to the guys.
We saw him scrap a little bit. He forced that, 8-second counter against Misic, trying to bring the ball up past half. And he did get that offensive rebound that led to, I think, RJ knocked down a three or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about DJ Carden, quite frankly,
Make the judgment when you're like, you're talking about like, we have this G League guard, we have
versus
this
another G League guard.
We have this G League big man. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's tough to square exactly how everybody's going to translate. When the Raptors were getting guys like popping off from the G League, it was in this incubator of like a team that wins over 50 games every single year, has such a clear cut identity, and it's like, well, we don't know which guy's the best right now, but we know which guy fits and has an avenue to minutes. Mm-hmm. And the Raptors are just so, like, in flux that, like, anybody could play, honestly. Right.
Well, Yeah, when you're playing Wara, DJ Carr, and Jonte in the same game, anyone can play. Without due respect, actually, last thing, just on those three guys in particular, like, are you confident that they can at least replicate some of what the bench was doing? Because I really did enjoy the rhythm that the bench was going, and of course, a lot of that was Scotty with the bench. And there's nobody on the team that even remotely replicates that skill set. But can they still move the ball? Can they still run the same sets with those three options in addition to Grady, who's obviously going to be continues to be very featured off the second unit?
The short answer is I think that they can. And it's because I think Darko has done a really good job of inserting the framework of this offense.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a longer answer?
Yeah, I can give the longer answer. I want to keep it short, but it makes sense because Darko has created like an offense where there isn't that much improvisation. Like a lot of the players are working through, automated reads, and there's room for improvisation within that. Mm-hmm. But the Raptors are coming from an offense that was a lot about like get into space, boogie woogie, make something happen. Whereas now it's kind of like, what is the next action? Mm-hmm. It's continuous motion offense. It's a lot of screening. And if you're a player and you see you come out of the corner out of like a Chicago action, which is you come off of a screen mm-hmm. into a dribble handoff, there are different things that the guy who set the screen initially and the guy in the dribble handoff can do. And the defensive response, if they're playing up, dictates that, okay, there's a cut here. Mm-hmm. The guy on top knows in practice we run this. If they're playing high, I know what pass to look for on the same side. If they bring the help from the weak side, I can look to make a skip. Yeah. And a lot of these reads are kind of been trained into these guys. And maybe DJ might be a little bit behind, but he's probably played in delay action and that kind of stuff coming up out of college and into an NBA player. So I think Darko has done a really good job of, incentivizing guys to move, mm-hmm. to work through the offense. And that's why, despite not being a great offense, you see why there's not a huge drop off from point A to point B, because they are just running a system now. And I think it's a system that will be good going into the future. And that will multiply when you get good players.
No, for sure. And I think that, honestly, that's a pretty important point, because when you think back to the comparison is always the Spurs, and the Spurs are championship standards. So the Raptors are very far from the Spurs. I got to obviously make that very clear, but that's what made the Spurs even more impressive at times, where it was okay, Pop's going to rest certain guys from national televised games, but here's Matt Bonner and he's just going to step in and they're going to still beat and play at a really high level. And it's a testament to the system and guys being able to step into it. So hopefully those guys continue to make the Raptors basketball at least watchable, because I don't need them to be winning necessarily, especially at this stage. If they lose, cool, it helps the tank. If they win, cool, it's nice to see young players succeed. But I want it to be watchable. Maybe that's just selfish, but I think that at least should be a goal. And they played until their offense died in the fourth quarter. And honestly, a lot of that was just guys missed some shots and things like that. But it was actually watchable. And it's, even though they missed out on some very, very key pieces, there were still competent basketball being played last night against the Charlotte Hornets. So before we go to this break, I want to let you know, Grammy Award-winning rock bands The National and The War on Drugs are touring for the first time together, and they're coming to Budweiser stage on September 20th with special guest Lucius as part of their Zen Diagram tour, and we have tickets to give away. That's right. It's not basketball tickets this time. It's concert tickets. To enter, all you have to do is text the daily code word to 590-590. Today's code word is National. Text National to 590-590 right now for your chance to win. We have another pair of tickets to give away on tomorrow's show. If you don't win with us, tickets are officially on sale at Ticketmaster.ca. Yeah, I'm really excited to see the National. I saw them over the summer, last summer, and it was quite good. And, I don't know. Do you have that one band that, you went through a sad period in life with, and even though you're no longer sad and in that period, once in a while you will go back to their album and just press that bruise?
This is where Blake is missing out, because I'm not edgy white guy, punk rock edgy white guy like he was. Because
no, it doesn't have to be a rock band. It could be any band. I mean, you have emotions, man.
Yeah. There's there's an album by 070 Shake, which is it's her debut album. There's a lot of sonic sounds in it. It's very, very emotional. That's a big album in my life, sure, that I could listen to. I'll get sad to it, sure.
Did you have a heartbreak, real-life heartbreak associated to the album, or no?
I feel no.
No.
My heartbreaks were associated with, maybe TV shows.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Well, that's The National for me. So text The National to 590-590. So you can, cry at the concert with me. I don't know. Well, anyway, we'll take a break. I've been your host, Will. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh yeah, shouts to welcome back to the Raptors show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Louie. Yeah, shouts to producer Derek for playing a little in the National. This is Fake Empire. You know Macklemore? Macklemore made a remix of this once and ruined the song a little bit for me, but I still love this song. Anyway, Samson, you're here.
You feel like lacrimose when you hear it? You're like, damn, I could cry right now?
A little bit. Like, I feel like it's shifted my mood instantly just hearing those little piano keys. So I know you can't hear this on the podcast. That's why you got to listen live. We always talk about this. Okay, last segment, we talked about the fact that we wanted to get a little bit deeper into RJ's season and, sure, and Grady's season. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with Grady or RJ?
We were talking about RJ on the break. So okay, let's keep it there and let's talk about RJ.
So RJ, clearly, since joining the Raptors, has been the most efficient period of his entire career.
Big time.
You know, expectations for RJ was fairly low. Like, I mean, I think in New York they were quite high because they drafted him third and they extended him. He was like the first rookie since like somebody in the 90s that they actually extended off their rookie scale contract. So the Knicks have just not done a good job developing or actually like retaining the players that they develop, at least historically. I think right now they're doing better. But in any case, RJ was seen as a little bit disappointing, maybe a little bit polarizing coming from New York. Since coming to Toronto, though, I feel like he's certainly exceeded expectations. He's certainly been efficient, still scoring at a high volume, and whatever, the free throws and the three-point shooting are quite confusing to me, but that's I think the overall look at RJ. What have you made of RJ as a Raptor?
So I did this deep dive, you know, a couple weeks ago where I watched every RJ pass that he made as a Raptor and then as a New York Knick. I love the deep dives because you can kind of notice some things. And one thing I was really looking forward to, because there's the easy stats that I can just read off that they don't really require a deep dive, but he had 53% true shooting in New York. It's 62% in Toronto. That change is radical.
Yes.
That's basically from being like an empty calorie, really bad stats guy to, as far as being a tertiary scorer, one of the most efficient in the NBA, given like his touch time, the amount of touches he gets a game. Yeah. He's supercharged every time he touches the ball.
Yeah.
And in a trade, like a change of landscape, whatever. He has the highest assist percentage of his career by a wide mark. He shoots 55% on his drives in Toronto. It was 38% with the Knicks. That's an insane change. Okay, he passes out of 40% of his drives here. It was 27% with the Knicks. Better decision-making.
Passing out of only 27% of your drives is an absurdly low number.
You know who else has that number? Zion Williamson. RJ is not Zion as far as a finisher. And, like, all the best drivers in the league typically sit between, like, 35 and 38% passing out. So RJ is more in line with that. And he's shooting 72% at the rim as a Raptor. He never cleared 60% at any point in his career. So, and also, as a Raptor, he's the team high on drives, points out of drives, and assists out of drives. That's like clearing, well, Pascal had more assists out of drives when he was here, but he's driving more than Pascal did as a Raptor, scoring more than Pascal did as a Raptor, and he's clearing Scotty on everything. All of this on low touches and low touch time.
Right, he doesn't dominate the ball.
No, he's like, he has less of the ball than Emmanuel. He has less of the ball than Scotty. He has like a similar amount of the ball to Jakob, and the touch times are low. Like, he's not putting a lot of dribbles in. He makes good decisions. But the deep dive was to figure out advantage assists. And we talked about like the assist farm and how, you know, the scorekeeper can kind of like hand you a couple. And like, hey, I'm not
coming
for this.
It's a big accusation. We got to come back tomorrow with harder facts on this one.
In general, not like the Raptors scorekeeper, but and assists in the NBA, I talked to Scotty about this last year because I did a deep dive on his advantage assists. And when I asked him, he was like, I think it's easier to get assists in the NBA than it is in college. Why? Because they can, like, you give a guy the ball, they're better scorers. You can just, like, luck your way into assists. But an advantage assist is an assist, you know, designation that I created. Like, not all assists are created equal. If you give a guy, like, the Patrick McCaw 11-assist game, where they're running like horns and a guy comes over the top and he gives it to him, and, like, there's a shot made. Like, it's an assist, but you didn't really create an advantage. RJ was 33% of his assists were advantage assists, which is, like, you create, like, this big change in a in the defense and create like a wide open corner three, where you get all the way into the lane and you create like a lay down to hand it off for a layup or something like that. Like big advantages. You did all the work and you gave the guy a shot or a make. And it went from 33% on the Knicks to 42% as a Raptor. And it was because he's creating more layups for teammates and he's creating more corner three-point shots. So the like surface-level numbers are all there. The more in-depth level numbers are all there. He's making better passing decisions. He's been way more efficient as a driver. And he also happens to be shooting the three ball well. Everything is like coalesced into like he's just a way different level of player here.
I think I think that's the thing for a lot of people is like, is this real? Is this sustainable from RJ? And I think that, you know, at certain times you still wonder that yourself because it is such a big jump. But what are some of the factors that have gone into this? Is this just a change in system? Is it a change in the personality he's playing with? Is it the fact that he lives within walking distance with Osmo's? Like, what's happening with this?
We talked about this before the show, and this is something that my friend, he's a terrific scout, Josh Codanera, pointed out as soon as he got traded, the disparity in lefties on the roster. And I kind of wanted just to, like, talk about that with you and give you, like, what do you think about it? Because you brought it up to
me. Yeah, yeah.
The lefty corollary.
Well, I mean, it's talked about so much in baseball, right? Do you have the right mix of left-handed, right-handed? Like, that's
balance in the lineup.
Out of every sport, like, really, like, baseball is the one that talks about your left-handedness, your right-handedness, the absolute most. Basketball's close, right? There are certain guys. It's obviously a bit of an anomaly. I mean, it's obviously rare to be a left-handed player, just a left-handed in general. But I think the fact that the Knicks had three guys in Brunson, in Randall, and RJ, and they were obviously primarily playing through those three guys more than anyone else, they were all lefties. It is just a really strange coincidence. Like, you just didn't see that in most other teams. Now, of course, we don't call it a coincidence when your top three guys are all right-handed players. You know what I mean? Like, I guess before Harden got there, it was like Kawhi, PG, Westbrook, they're all right-handed players, right? So it's not, like, necessarily an issue there. But I do think for RJ, and to an extent, the Knicks played a lot of pick and roll, played a lot of just, like, stand still, RJ, you're going to get a screen, but generally speaking, you're going to barrel your way to the hoop, and we're going to play off of that. And I think for the Raptors, they're putting him in better situations where either he's curling or he's already in motion in a way, or there's an advantage dribble created elsewhere, the ball swings over to him. There's certainly more ball movement in this system versus New York. Whatever, New York has a more efficient offense. But, yeah, I do think that there's other kind of conditions that have created for RJ to be more efficient. And honestly, maybe just him being a lefty is just part of that. I mean, there was a play yesterday where he was driving in transition. He was pushing, and he had the ball on the right side. Did a Euro step kind of into his defender, and then he still went up for a left-handed layup, even though it was on the right-hand side, with the inside-hand layup with the left. And I was like, he is entirely predictable when he goes to the hoop, and yet nobody can stop him. There has to be a special skill and a talent in that.
It's a lot of it, I think, is just that, like, that strength creation. Like,
okay.
Bigger guys, if he's not being loaded up on, it's a one-on-one. If there's a guy 6'10 and under, basically all the faith in the world that RJ is going to, like, put that guy closer to the stanchion than he is to the rim.
Yeah.
Like, RJ is going to get that shoulder right on the chest, move him out of the way without chicken winging, without getting the offensive foul.
That's a great
job.
And he's
going to clear space. That's really important. He's a bulldozer, a snowplow. And the lefty stuff, it is funny that it's in baseball because baseball is, like, discreet. Players have a less tangible impact on one another than in any other game because it's like they don't go to the batter's box with you, but you're the lefty and the righty. Whereas like basketball, everyone is like these intermingling, you know, skill sets and everything like that. And RJ goes from playing on the Knicks and defenses that are very used to loading up on isolations and pick and rolls from Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle that somehow always end up going to the left side of the glass. Which, as you discussed, like, RJ is trying to get there.
He's like, I can't sneak attack anybody.
You know, there's this, like, path dependency, right? It's like, you're going to the spot that you've been trained to go to this spot. You go to this spot. This is your best spot. And it's funny that, like, just the change from Knicks to Raptors, the change of, like, offensive environment, and honestly, to a worse, by the numbers, offensive environment.
Yeah, for sure.
Has created, you know, the conditions for him to succeed a little bit more. Well, way more. And then on top of that, too, I think you talked about the curve drives and coming off of curls. There's, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, Polar. His name is Skyfall on Twitter. He's a biomechanics. He's a Korean doctor, and he works in sports. But every once in a while, he'll kind of descend down and give, like, a biomechanical explanation of why players succeed.
Nice.
And he's long been really interested in RJ Barrett and how just for like his type of athleticism, straight line drives aren't as friendly as curve drives. And for the Raptors to switch from being like not a pick and roll offense or an isolation offense like the Knicks, which incentivizes straight line drives on pick and roll, to come off of like more dribble handoffs out of the corner, more of these blade cuts, you know, alongside the pick and roll happening at the top, it puts him on more curved drives, which he gets to kind of like grind guys down and still get to his left hand at the rim.
That's interesting.
I think the Raptors have just been like, they've been helping him out.
I think, honestly, like there's obviously a lot of talk this year. It was like, Darko's going to come in, he's going to be a developmental guy. And I feel like, you know, there's going to be hit or misses with it. I think with RJ, it's absolutely a case of him identifying or the rest of the Raptors identifying that like, there's a little bit higher in what he can do. You can make a more efficient version of what RJ Barrett's been able to do, and that's what he's shown us over and over again. Now, I think he probably still – there's still lots of clear limitations, right?
Sure.
Like, it's still a huge surprise when he finishes with his right sometimes in the game. It's – the three-point shooting, we still don't – I mean, to our previous discussion, we still don't fully buy into it. The free throws, it's certainly there. I think even just one-on-one shot creation late in the game, I'm thinking back maybe to the Pacers game when Pascal came back and the play was like – I guess it was supposed to go to Scotty, but the ball didn't go to Scotty. He went to RJ. RJ went one-on-one, and he ultimately ended up taking a turnaround jump shot that was, like, a little bit short. I still think that, like, I don't know if we want to talk bag, but, like, I still feel like there could be a lot more done there. But probably for the first time in his career, like, RJ has gotten to a spot now where he can consistently show he can do this one thing really, really well at, like, an above-average repeatable level, because that's what we see every game now is RJ between 20 and 25 points and he's shooting honestly between 50 and 60%. That's such a good thing to build off of. Now we can try to add in the secondary skills, and it's almost in a weird way kind of similar to the Grady discussion, right? Because Grady started the season and the conceit with Grady was like he's gonna be this really awesome shooter and guys were still chasing him around, and he was doing a good job of, you know, if he draws two, he's, you know, throwing the pass out, and or he's getting into the guy slipping to the basket, you know, but he just wasn't doing the main thing, which was knocking down the threes after a while. And I think it really messed with his confidence for a while. He went down to the G League, came back. Since then, he's been really, really good. I know you've always been really high on Grady.
Yeah.
And I you know, I've seen your tweets. You feel personally vindicated that Grady's come around too. So I know you're closely tied to this. Talk to me about Grady as well in his season.
Yeah, so the big thing with Grady, obviously, is that you have to shoot it if you're a shooter. Nothing matters if you don't shoot the basketball. Grady, you know, Bobby came out, and I'm paraphrasing here, not the direct quote, so if it's sloppy, my apologies to Bobby Webster, but Bobby, you know, was asked about Grady and kind of like his off-ball presence, and he said, as far as like off-ball, Grady's in a league of his own category. And you watch Grady, and that starts to make, like, a lot of sense, is, like, how heady he is as a cutter. You know, because there are certain things that happen on an NBA floor. Let's say you're playing, like, basketball at the pickup level, or you're, like, a kid getting coached. Your coach might tell you that, like, the trigger for you to cut is if you see the numbers on your defender's back, something
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
But for an NBA player, it's, like, the overall shape of the floor and the defense. So, like, what triggers, you know, when the Raptors set the season record for the NBA in points scored off of cuts this season against the, you know, the Pacers, what triggers a Grady cut from the baseline? It's the same thing that triggered, like, Ochai's cuts against the Hornets. It's if a guy pulls off the corner, that creates a lane for you to cut. If there's a guy driving from the opposite side, you can cut to the 45, from the 45 straight into the lane and create, like, a secondary path to the left side of the basket for a drop-off pass. These types of things, it's very, like, heady stuff for an NBA player to always know the proper cut. And Grady knew it before he came into the NBA. It's just like, if you don't hit the three-point shot, though, then people don't care about where you're kind of going around on the floor. So we're seeing a marriage of, like, three-point efficiency. He's basically up to 39% on the season after hanging around at, like, 23%. Over the last 20 games, he's shooting 47% from three. He's shooting 77% at the rim. He's shooting 55% from the long mid-range. Like, everything is popping off for him, because he's so good at doing the early work to put himself in positions to succeed, and the shot making's been there.
Okay, so this is one question that I've always had about other guys, because it's not so simple as he's a shooter, he's a movement shooter, or whatever, right? I feel like, especially things like in the instincts of when to move and when to cut, there has to be something special about Grady in that sense, because you don't, for example, see a guy like Gary. Like, I would love if Gary moved and had the same sort of reads off the ball as a guy like Grady, because I think that, you know, it would take his game to another level, and I've been, you know, hoping for that. But we've seen that he's not that type of player. Like, can a player learn to move and cut like Grady?
I think definitely players can learn, especially within the framework of an offense. You know, we talked about the Spurs, for example. Mm. Like, Gary Neal, when he started playing for the Spurs.
Guys sit around on a podcast talk about Gary Neal.
Yeah, that's like the dude's rock thing. It's just like naming sports players. You're like, Gary Neal. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, Gary Neal. But he wasn't always that great at, like, the two-on-one out of the corner, making the pass down when he gets, like, a bit more attention as the shooter. But within the concept of, like, what the Spurs are doing offensively, you learn those reads, and those reads become comfortable. Grady's a guy who came into the NBA comfortable with all those reads, did a lot of it at Kansas, like those empty side actions. And we see a guy like Gary who, as a shooter, is far more comfortable getting to his own shot off his own dribble or doing it on, like, the same side of the floor, shaping to someone else's drive as, like, a catch-and-shoot player. I can't tell you exactly why Gary has been so limited as, like, a decision-maker, as a playmaker, or why his cutting hasn't especially towards the inside of the, you know, the arc, has been so, not impressive. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you why that is. But I think that, like, within the concept, players can definitely learn when they're supposed to cut. That's why you see, like, Pascal this year was a far more effective cutter than he was the season before. And it's just, like, playing in a different type of offense that requires more cutting means that you have to recognize those cuts for yourself. And, like, anytime I talked to Precious last year when he'd have a good cutting game, he'd always kind of, like, you know, bristle at me and say, like, it's a read. And I'd be like, what type of read? Can you give me the secret sauce? And he never would. But it is, sure. Like, it's the coach has to put the framework in. And there's, like, there's guaranteed reads that some players have to make.
Yeah.
And Gary needs to make more of those. And Grady makes those, plus more of these, like, interpretive reads of the floor where he's making, like, to go back to another Spurs guy, like that Danny Green baseline cut to fall guy into the corner, because you're going to overload the corner and it might create a driving lane or it might create like a three-point shot for you. He's just got such a great sense of what his motion means for the offense, for other players, and what it means for creating his own shot. He's very, very potent with it.
Yeah, no, he's really the exact type of off-ball player that you want to surround most stars with. And of course you can... everything ties back to Scottie, so if you want to tie it to him. But even independently of that, I think that for Grady, like, this is something that you can see. And I think one thing that's been pressing from him too is he's got a good catch radius, got good hands. You know, like, sometimes, I mean, the Raptors definitely throw a lot of high-low passes, and he's often in motion. A lot of players will flub those. He seems to be able to catch and convert with good efficiency. I mean, the other game, he even caught and, like, finished essentially on, like, a lob, you know. And the way I was comparing it was almost like, he's like a soccer player with, like, a really good first touch. So you can, like, whip any kind of pass to him. He can control it, and then he can get to a shot.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic. That's the that's the one right there. Yeah, and also, he has, like, the scorpion kick, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It's like the no-dip three, something like that.
He's got all the little tricks, you know? And at this point, I'm just happy that, you know, he's been able to create more and more. I think we'll have a minute on this, but, like, is there more that he can create his own shot?
Totally.
Or is that just like a next step for next season kind of deal?
So, well, it's definitely in the future. And we saw it a little bit last game, kind of when they're running him off of those curls. And he's actually catching in the middle of the floor and going up with like a mid-range jump shot. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will not take that shot because they're like, you don't want to take that shot. The mid-range is the, you know, the home of stars, all that kind of stuff. But Grady is so comfortable because he has that sling type of jumper. And he's not like a necessarily a set shooter in that way, that he can be a little bit more diverse in the types of shots he tries to get off. Like, there's this, he came out of, in a preseason game against, I guess it would have been the 76ers because it was Kelly Oubre, but he came out of this corner handoff and he did a throw ahead dribble into the middle of the court to go chase and set his feet up. And Kelly Oubre came with a dig down. He picked it up beforehand and, like, fading to his right, hit a mid-range jumper.
Right.
And that type of jumper is not available to all catch and shoot guys, but it's available to Grady Dick. And he has like different footwork that he can get into that he showed at Kansas, that he showed as like a Raptor, that allows him to get into more shots, which I think as a shooter will help create or control for his volume. And then on top of that, we're also talking about a guy who we've seen him like make the lob coming downhill out of the pick and roll. We've seen him navigate the middle of the floor to be a guy who can get to his own shot. Like, there's a lot of room for him with an improved handle to kind of, I guess, get to his own looks more often.
Fair enough. Okay, we're going to take another break. You've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, William Lou. Continue to be joined by fellow guest co-host, Samson Folk. And we are joined by Savannah Hamilton, sideline reporter. Sav, what's going on? Another long road trip ahead of you later this week. But, you know, we don't have to talk about that for now. Were you at practice?
I was at practice today, yes.
Okay, good, because I have a couple questions about what happened at practice. But actually, before the break, we were having this discussion, me and Samson, about just what sets Grady apart as a shooter, especially as a movement shooter. So I want to ask you that question as well. What have you seen from Grady that makes him different from other shooters that we've also seen on the team, both past and present?
Yeah, I think the difference is that he's a sharpshooter. He's a specialist at shooting. I think the past shooters that we've had, you know, they kind of did a little bit of everything, but Grady was literally brought in for his shooting strictly, pretty much. But, you know, we see off-ball cutting from him. He's athletic. I think the best shooters that we've ever seen in the league know how to move off the ball. And, like, that's Klay Thompson. That's the J.J. Redick's. And I think he's kind of following that mold. I'm not saying that he's, like, right there with them, of course. But the way that he's going and if he's continuing his shooting percentage the way he is, like, it's not going to be a stretch in the future. But yeah, so I think his mentality of, you know, positioning himself, getting ready, getting set for the ball, like the pass to come to in order to get the shot off is really strong. And that's something that he's gotten a lot better at the NBA level. Took a while, of course, but there's not much flaws that you could point out in terms of his offensive, like, shot right now, just like strictly looking at his shooting and how he's moving off ball.
Yeah,
a lot has been made of as far as, like, the conditioning was a pre-draft concern for a few teams. It was something I talked to Grady about at Summer League, was the size of the court changing, like having conditioning for an NBA, you know, size court. And also, like, he's talked about it a little bit. Masai's talked about it a little bit. Darko talked about, like, we're putting him on the routine or whatever the hell it is. Have you heard anything lately? Like, is there an update? They're like, yeah, you put on like 4 pounds of muscle or something like that. Are there any murmurs around Grady, I guess, in his conditioning or, like, the weight he's putting on, anything like that?
I mean, I haven't heard anything, like, in particular when it comes to, like, you know, a number of pounds that he's put on. But, I mean, if you want to look at the eye test, like, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't see striations in his shoulder to begin the season, and now I'm starting to see that. Like, okay. Well, just notice. Like, you just, like, see that he's shooting when he's shooting. Like, I just noticed that, like, his muscles are becoming a bit more defined. And I think that's a matter of, like, when you're playing in basketball season, like, you do get a lot more, even in a cardio, like, great shape. But on top of that, you know, Grady has talked to me about how he's put in a lot of work into the gym with Johnny Lee, which is one of the trainers, of course, for the Raptors. And I think you could just visually see the difference. Like, it's maybe not, like, the biggest difference in the world, but, like, it's definitely, for me at least, I'm around him enough to, like, just, like, start to notice these things.
You're hitting on something that, like, I noticed as well, like, the bicep stridation. Yeah. I've never heard that term before, though. That's incredible.
Oh, really? Muscle, yeah. Stridations?
I have no idea. I would say, like, vascularity or something.
Yeah.
You're not a real lifter.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not a real lifter. I don't know any of that kind of stuff.
No, I never heard that one either. No, Sam's the only real lifter here. And I think my only other thing with Grady, want to ask both of you guys about, is just, like, if we want to get Grady more involved, can we have him screen for the ball more often? Would you like to see more actions with Grady screening for the ball in particular? So, I don't know. Sam, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just one of those things where, like, and I talked to Kelly Olynyk a little bit about this too, because I asked Kelly, I'm like, when are we going to see you in more pick and roll actions yourself? Because he could bring a world of options, like, arguably, to this team. But, you know, something he said is, like, Kelly told me, I'm just trying to learn this team right now, and then we'll get into the specialized place after. So I think that's kind of, though, like, even though it's Kelly in particular saying this because he's new, I think it kind of goes for the entire team. Just because, like, they're all learning each other now, especially without Scotty, you basically have to, like, reface an entire team for the rest, like, of the 20 games remaining, basically. So I think with Grady now ahead of this, like, I definitely would like to see, like, even like necessarily not necessarily on ball screens, but off ball screens. I think they do a little bit of actions like that so far, but like whether it's a baseline or a down screen, stuff that like that can just get him open, like I mean wide open, maybe even on the wing, not just like the corner. But even at practice today, I'll touch on the fact that like I was asking him like what makes the corner shot so special. And he said that it's just where they have him currently in the offense. So it's a shot that he practices the most at practice because he knows that that's where he's currently positioned, like supposed to be. And so I think in the future, as his shooting percentage, I mean, Samson knows this probably the best. His shooting percentage, what do you say? You always tweet, keep that elbow
tight. Oh, keep that elbow tight, baby. Yeah, it's been 47% over the last 20 games.
But and what's he from the corner? I think he's like 60% corner.
Mm. Yeah, it's so insane. It's
just insane. Yeah, so I think that, yeah, I would like to see him expand that. Because if that's a shot that he practices and he's focused on, then let's see how we could expand it to the wing. And if that requires a few more actions to get him open on a wing, because obviously that's probably a bit more of a contested area, let's just see what happens. Like, I would be very curious if Darko wanted to experiment with that.
Yeah, and just to add on to that too, like the split action is probably, you know, we talked about J.J. Redick, we talked about Klay Thompson. One of the best ways to weaponize a shooter, and it does depend on above the break shooting, as Tav was talking about. Mm-hmm. We saw it. It was the split action that the Raptors ran last night that led to Grady's big rainbow corner three. Mm. Kelly is on ball.
Yep.
We have Emmanuel Quickley and Gary Trent Jr., a split action. Quickley comes down, catches the ball off the bounce pass, sprays it to the corner. Grady hits. But the game before, when Scotty was still playing, some of this is not as fun because Scotty's not there, but the Raptors ran a Grady-Scotty split action, five possessions in a row with Kelly on ball. Yep. And they also hit, like Grady hit an above the break three because Scotty has so much gravity as the guy moving downhill,
right,
that Grady pops out open off that split action. He hit a, you know, above the break three in the game prior, but they ran it five times in a row. It wasn't like a home run every time or anything like that. It's a fairly simplistic play that you don't have to dedicate. It's only a three-player play. You don't have a lot of seconds come off the clock, but it's something dangerous that you can insert basically as like your primary action to get everything going. And it might even be able, like a really good way, to move the defense around to initiate another type of play. I know the Raptors a lot of times like to have like a secondary action to promote movement before they run like an R.J. Barrett pick and roll, just so that the lane is more open. So Grady, you can start in early offense. I know he starts in the corner a lot, but you can start like more above the break stuff to open up not just him for shots that he'll hit, but for teammates to have more driving lanes and more opportunities for themselves.
Yeah, that was really fun watching him, Kelly, Scotty run a lot of offense for that second unit. And Bruce, and I guess we didn't even mention Bruce was unavailable yesterday. Cool. He was, yeah. Not to be rude, but, you know, it didn't really impact too much. But, yeah, him and Ochai just kind of, like, getting out the way in either that's in the corners or just whatever. But it has been fun. I think for Grady on the season, yeah, he's 61% out of the left corner, 39% out of the right corner, and 30% at the top of the floor above the break. So, I mean, this is also the full season rather than just the last couple of months where clearly he's played at a different level. But it's been fun. I mean, one of the major things to watch for now, I mean, you know how we used to have a segment every day, we would talk about Scottie Barnes on every single episode. It's probably going to fall to Quickley, RJ, and Grady. And we have now done that. So what other potential storylines have popped up at practice, Savannah? Please tell me there's other things that were discussed. Like who did they bring to the podium? Who did they get? Who did Phil bring you guys?
Wow, you guys, you just really wanted me to do your job. I get it.
I can't be in two places at once. I want to go to practice today, you know? No. You never know. You might get Baker pizza.
No. yeah, what happened? They brought RJ as well. RJ was just kind of talking about, like, honestly, you didn't really miss too much. He was kind of talking about, like, what he was seeing out there. I asked him about the Pelicans, even though he didn't play the first time he saw them.
Yeah.
Because kind of what he needs, like what the team needs to do tomorrow, because Zion is a threat. Brandon Ingram had a really great game against them. And he kind of was a bit more short spoken as he tends to be. But just kind of like summarizing, like, yeah, just coming out with a lot more intensity, of course. Mm. Both those guys, like, you know what they bring. And so focusing on that. But yeah, I think also they talked about like what role RJ needs to kind of fill now that Scotty's out. And RJ was just talking about the fact that, like, he doesn't feel like he needs to, do something that he's not already. And so if you look at the game yesterday, he said that he felt like he was just literally just playing his game like any other time he would. And so it's just more so, I think, about like refining at this point with this group rather than like, you know, no one individual is going to step up into that role, you know?
Yeah, that's good, because that's what Darko said yesterday postgame as well. So you always want to see the players and the coaches on the same page.
Well, and you also, can you conceive that RJ can like ramp it up farther than like 21-5 on good efficiency? Probably not that much higher. And like the 5 turnovers that he had yesterday, mm-hmm. one of them was like just a little bit sloppy, but all of them were like, you know, back end of the clock, trying to like extend himself as a creator.
Yeah.
And he's already doing so much. It's like, it's probably like a little bit much. And honestly, if a guy comes out every game and is like, I'm giving you like 21-5 on 50% shooting, that's,
dude, I'll take
that's
that
gravy.
Run. Yeah, I'll take that and run.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess this is more of a point to like the craft of what we do. But Sav and Samson, like, how, when you have a situation where the player is like not trying to give you much and they're like, yeah, we just got to play with more intensity, what are some of the things, how do you change your approach to get a little bit more detail of the situation, which is our job, obviously?
This is what happened with Masai on media day as well. Is you try and like take what they said and make them reckon with what they've said prior. Is like, you said
okay.
this.
All right.
It's not like, it might seem, I
you
know,
sit in it? Okay.
that might make them seem like you're trapping them. But like, it's like, oh, you said this. So then, because a lot of times players know what you're saying is true, but they're like, I don't want to answer that, which is their prerogative. Like, I don't have to answer stuff about my work after work is done. I get it. But like,
I mean, it's part of their job.
Reference something they've said so that they're like, okay, I did say that. Mm-hmm. So now I have to answer that. I made the mistake a few times with OG is like, you try and widen the question and then you just pick something that you said and it's like, that's the answer now. It's like, ah.
Yeah.
Tough.
You really have to be careful with OG. Sav, what about you? What about you? Give me some tips. Give me some tips of your craft.
I mean, you have all the tips. Like, I should be asking for tips from you, Will. But
I just approach them as their friend every time. And most of the time they fall for it.
See? We all have our tactics. For me, it's more so just like, okay, you explain that, what that looks like for you, or like kind of just diving deeper. If they give me a generic answer, if we all put more intensity, okay, like what do you mean by that? Oh, and then they're like, okay, well, hustling for rebounds and da 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 da. Okay, well then have you practiced that? And just kind of like giving them a line of questions that kind of follows the ball of where you eventually want to end up, which is basically like enough to work with for a story. So it's like, oh, intensity is a priority, but how does that look like? Okay, well, they want to execute with precision on offense. But then also like defensively, they want to make sure they keep crash the boards, keep the opponents off the boards, and da, da, da. You know, it's like, so you can eventually like shape it to what you need it to be, but that's through the kind of also guiding, I find, the shorter spoken players to a conversation. I kind of like, even you guys use an example of OG, like with OG, whenever I was talking to him, I made it so it was very much conversational.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, it felt like more of a, instead of a question, intense like interview, like what we would normally do, it was more like, okay, OG, like, you know, you guys got the Pelicans coming up, you know, what stands out to you about them? And he's probably going to tell you, like, oh, they have a big guy in Zion, they have Brandon Ingram, blah. Okay, like, so when it comes to guarding, you know, a guy like Zion, like, what's the first thing you look to do? And then just like going from there, he might be just like, oh, just take away his strong dominant hand. Okay, well, I know that you told me before that you watched a lot of film, so like,
mm-hmm.
you know, what about the film that Zion like makes him so good as a big man? And then like by the third question in,
yeah, it's usually
like, if it's more conversational, he'll actually open up a lot. So then that's just an example of OG. I find that RJ is a little bit in the same line, but RJ is actually he gives you a little bit more. But yeah, that's more so my tactic. I don't make them come to terms with what they said, Samson's tactic, but I do like that.
It's, you know, it's interesting because like a lot of times I'm writing like analysis pieces. So it's a different job, to be quite honest. Like
it is,
there's
yeah,
like,
for sure.
I'll never be as good as like you or Lindsay at getting like these interesting anecdotes and tidbits. Like, I don't know anything about Norman Powell's rap career, but like she got that right. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm like, hey, I saw what was happening on the floor, but the people who read my work, like, they don't really care if I say something's happening. They're like, make the coach say it so that I know it's real. I'm like, oh, yeah, they blitzed and, like, they're playing a different level of screen. They're like, you're just some schmuck, and I am. So I try and, like, frame the question, like, this was happening, correct? And, like, why? Mm-hmm. And then hopefully they validate it.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, I mean, honestly, I miss out on a lot of the media scrums now. But when I go, I watch both the reporters and the and whoever the player or the coach is asking questions. It's I don't know. It's always interesting to me, at least. I hope it's interesting to other people, too, how media people do their jobs in a way. Pivoting off of that, because we have seen a lot of movement at the end of the roster, and it kind of got me thinking. Marquise Noel, by the way, just got waived. So unfortunate for him. Mohamed Ougué gets converted. That's great. You know, you get to see the Raptors have brought in a new 10-day guy. I'm sorry, like, I was not familiar with this game, so maybe we'll have more information on it tomorrow. My point is that there's, like, a decent amount of, like, end of the roster turn, and especially now with some injuries to the group. Saw Bruce Brown didn't play last night. That extended the rotation. We didn't see Jakob Poeltl for the second half. That extended the rotation. Scotty's out. I'm just curious for some of the other guys at the end of the roster, what they, if there's one or two things that they need to do to stick around for not just the remainder of the season, but maybe potentially going forward. So, Sav, I'll start with you. With Jordan Mora, what's one or two things that he really needs to do that the Raptors will keep him around next year and beyond?
I think it's a lot of playing with consistency. The game against Atlanta, not the last time, but the time before
that. Yeah, he was awesome.
Felt like a breakout game. I was like, who is this guy? He was bringing a spark on offense. Like, he couldn't miss. Mm-hmm. But then defensively, he was holding his own enough. And I remember, like, a lot of fans and even my own dad, like, messaging me, being like, this guy's awesome. And I was like, wait. Let's just see if he can do it again. And then he had another good game in there. I can't remember which one it was now. But, you know, it's like, so out of maybe, like, the past, like, 6-7 games, like, he's had 2 games, but, you know, given the opportunities that he's had, it's kind of been limited. Although he did have the opportunity to start in Atlanta the last game, but I believe he had 0 points.
Yeah, it was and, real quiet. Like,
wasn't as efficient, I think, even defensively. And so I think for him, it's like, I'd like to see more consistency and to be like a grit player on defense. If you could establish yourself as a guy that's going to do the dirty work and, like, you know, not necessarily look for your shot, because let's be realistic, we don't need a guy that's looking for his shot per se with this team. Like, we need a guy that can facilitate, can be a connector, and, like, get, once again, get the dirty work done on defense. If you're having a hot shooting night, bonus type of thing. Those are the two things I would like to see from him, is more consistency and his, like, just play and when he does get the opportunities, and then also this, like, better defensive presence.
For myself, I'm looking for him to play within scheme. I think that he, as far as, like, skill set, he sits well above some of the other Raptors as far as, like, the combination of handle, shot making, and, like, athleticism. I think the inflection of those things, he's pretty high on the roster.
Yep.
And it's just about, like, playing within scheme and making sure that, like, when you get the advantage, you make the right read, like the check down to the guy rolling to the rim. If you can make that read, make that read. Making that automatic, like, play across the court, and then cutting through the paint to get to the opposite side to clear for another action. Like, always making it from, like, one play to the next. And when you have an opportunity, like, space to hit a shot, you know, a bit of time, like, maybe you get the ball with, like, 8 seconds left on the shot clock, that's your possession now. You make of it what you will. And then, it, like, you can try and create against all odds, get the ball in transition, big left-handed in and out, finish at the bucket with the left hand, like, all that kind of stuff. He when put in positions to succeed, quite often can. He has enough talent, enough size, all that kind of stuff. And just, like, staying within scheme, I think, is very, very strong for him. And even when I talked to Caitlin Cooper about, like, his time in Indiana, he succeeded in very specific context there. And I think that makes sense for the Raptors as well.
He does very much look the part, which I feel like, I just feel like it would be a really great story for the last, like, 20-odd games or so left in the season if Wara could show you some of that consistency that Savannah's looking for, and some of that ability to execute that you're looking for, Samson. Real quickly, with Jontay Porter, Sav, I mean, we already know Jontay. We've seen him a little bit when Jakob first got injured. Jakob's already ruled out for tomorrow against the Pelicans, so that's going to be a tough one. But it doesn't mean that he gets more time to play. What are some of the things, what are some of the swing skills for him that if he nails those, he's back on the roster next year and potentially beyond as, like, a third string or even better than that, backup big or something like that?
I think something that's keeping Jontay well on the like on the roster right now is the fact that he is like just passing the ball. He's a passing big, and like he has a knack for that. I think what I'd like to see more of is his rebounding, maybe like just a bit more assertion and going up for boards. And not saying that, you know, he's not right now, but I think it just could be taken up another gear. And that's just kind of, you know, knowing like how to hunt the ball. He's still a guy that, I mean, I keep in mind that he's floating between it's essentially the same system between the Raptors 905 and the Raptors, but when you're playing with different players, it's completely different at the same time. And so kind of like getting more familiar with the system, I don't really have to be quite honest, like too much to critique with him. I think on defense, like the defensive end, it's like, it's hard to tell if he's a step slow at times or if he's still learning where to be on defense. And so that's like kind of like the grace I'll give him in these next 20 games is if I can see where he's at defensively. But overall, like in the immediate future, just like a lot of assertion and aggression, if he can grab, like aim to try to grab 10 boards a game, you know, and doesn't necessarily have to put up all the points in the world here. Once again, he's a player that doesn't need to do that. But if he could establish himself as like a really dominant rebounder, I think that, and he's already doing a great job at passing, that's a good player to keep around.
I think a lot of what I'm expecting from Jonte is, I got asked this question actually last night about like, can he replicate what Kelly and Jakob do on the short roll? And like, he certainly can, but it's more so about the defensive response. We see this with Draymond Green a lot. Like, if you blitz Steph Curry, Steph's going to make the over-the-top pass to Draymond Green. But Draymond is so bad as a shot maker that he can't dictate that he gets that big rotation to start spraying the ball to the corner or making these, like, lob passes to the rim like he used to. He just doesn't have pop as a shot maker. It's on Jonte to come in now and see those opportunities that he'll probably get and like make good on some of them as a scorer, whether that's like the 8-foot push shot or, you know, pressing all the way to the rim, depending on like how big the rotation that comes in. He's a very talented playmaker at his size, at his position. That was the eval coming out of the draft and the shot too. He'll be doing some pick and popping, of course. I hope he hits on a lot of them, but I think it's the in-between stuff, his shot making there, his presence in the middle of the floor offensively, that will allow him to kind of be like the connective piece to allow the Raptors to get to a lot of the looks that they want to. And defensively, I think that he's able to do a lot of the early work because there's like an athleticism deficit that he has at some times. But like, if you read the game well enough and you like have the scout of the other team, you can recognize a lot of what they're trying to do and you can kind of like do the early work to get ahead of the play a little bit. And sometimes you can get burned on that cheating. But a lot of times at the NBA level, that actually works quite well defensively. Mm.
Okay, well, these are the storylines. You guys hype? You guys excited?
This is a stick.
Yeah. Savannah, I appreciate you. I'll see you at the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yo, be honest with us. How many media members made it down for yesterday's game?
I mean, the good news is I can count on two hands, probably.
Mm. Jeez.
Mm. Yeah.
Wait, we have this question. Who are the grinders? The gondola people or the, like, 116, 117 people? Who are the grinders?
You know what? Considering that I'm a gondola girl, when I'm not doing Sportsnet, I will actually give it to the 116ers.
Yeah.
If I'm being quite honest.
Yeah.
Like, me and Will were...
we're vibing. Sam, it's vibes up there.
You're there a lot too, but like, yeah, we vibe up there for sure. We're at pretty much every single game.
Not when it's Sunday against the Hornets, and it's also my dad's birthday. I covered that one from home.
See, exactly.
But that was valid. That's valid. Okay, that's valid.
But that being said, guess who's still there?
Like,
the Doug Smiths, the Eric Corines, all of them. So.
You're right. Real grinders in 116. Yep. All right, Savannah, I appreciate you, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Okay, bye.
Yeah, you know, it was look, you got to pick your choose your spots, you know, like I'm not saying I'm Kawhi or anything, but like you got to load manage once in a while.
This was
my dad's birthday, man. Happy 59th birthday to my father. Love you. And I know your coworkers watch the show sometimes. So hopefully they tell you in the break room that I'm talking about you again, which always makes you feel a little uncomfortable. So salute dad. That's all. Yeah.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah, you know what? We're going to take our last break. We'll come back, talk some NBA basketball, because there's only so much you can get out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Raptors beat the Hornets last night, man. And we talked about it for an hour and a half, but we're going to take our last break. I've been your host, Will Lou. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Once again, DJ Derek. Another great hit. Shout to Oasis. Some might say, you know, What's the Story, Morning Glory? Great album. You know, one of the greatest of all time. I would even make that argument. A lot of bangers off that one. Samson, you've already clarified this. This is not the type, but...
this is not up my alley. I'm like, I'm more of like hip-hop and R&B, yeah. Honestly. Like if we had like D'Angelo on here.
Yeah. All right. Derek, that's your challenge for tomorrow. And again, for everyone listening to the podcast, you just heard the generic intro outro jingle. Samson, I got to get to know you a little bit better. Tell me, what's your origin story? All I know is you grew up in the prairies. Like,
yeah.
What was that like?
Honestly, I'm not like a pro prairies guy. Watching at home.
Okay, wait, hold on. What are the positions one could take on the prairies like?
You could be pro prairie.
What does that mean? Like,
it means like if
fly, regardless if you're pro or anti or.
Well, I think that like there's some. This will be a little bit political, but like there's some like regressive politics I find in the prairies that you that you can find more well represented there.
Okay.
However, it doesn't. It's cheaper to live there, which is good. It's more affordable. Mm-hmm. I've found since moving here, like I lived in the prairies, I lived in Mexico, now I live here. Mm-hmm. Toronto is the most expensive
by a
wide margin.
Absolutely. Between those three places? Yeah. Absolutely.
Like my relation to basketball was really, it was hard to find good basketball. Like we had to travel. I ended up playing a little bit in the States and like with a club basketball team, but we had to drive so far to like go to practices. Then we had to like, we picked miles and miles of ditches because there's this thing you can do in Saskatchewan where like you pick the garbage out of ditches for money and they save the ditches garbage for like fundraisers. So we basically would fund our basketball trips to go to like Gonzaga and do like ID camps and tournaments by picking ditches. So I would go through this phase of like picking ditches and just being like, oh my God, every Sunday morning you go out there and then we'd go play basketball.
Wow.
That was like 3 years.
Okay.
So it was tough to find good basketball in the prairies, but I know like so many great people from there, and it shaped who I am today, obviously.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I did not know that about you.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't know much about it. That's why I asked this question.
What's your story, Will?
My story is I immigrated to Toronto, and one day on a playground, and again, I was still like fairly new to all the culture here, and they were asking me, and they were like, you support the Raptors or the Leafs? And I'm like, it's a or? And then they're like, yeah, you can only pick one. And I was like, honestly, man, only seen white people play hockey. I'm picking basketball. Yeah. And I think it's kind of stuck with it. But I mean, yeah, it just when you grow up in the city, like everyone plays basketball. Like it's like the number one default like gym thing. It's like, oh yeah, gym teacher's not here. You guys play basketball today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gym is soccer and basketball. So that's what's like stuck with me.
There was not a lot of basketball where I grew up, like hardly any at all. And like to see it from growing up, there were like two basketball nets in town. The town I grew up in only had 700 people. I grew up like in a crazy small town.
Where'd you grow up?
Sturgis, Saskatchewan.
Gotcha.
And so I grew up there, but there were like only two basketball hoops. But when I went back there and was doing carpentry in the summer with my dad like 2 years ago, there was like 80. It was just like the growth of basketball can really be seen on that level. That like
that's really
so many more people. It helps that Filipino people move there because like, they're hoopers forever.
Buddy.
But it's cool to see that growth on that level from like the time I left for university and lived elsewhere to come back to see that growth was cool.
Yeah, the highest cultural hooper per capita is definitely with Filipinos. Yeah. Absolutely, man. Shifty games, every single one of them. Always and a shifty game.
Crazy calves too. Always.
Yeah. My whole Tuesday run is Filipino.
Yeah.
So I'm like very familiar with just the whole, like the passion and the culture around it. It's awesome.
I feel like if you're a basketball player, you're going to be familiar with at least some parts of like Filipino culture.
Absolutely.
Because there's going to be crossover.
Yeah. Shout out to Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
All right. There's no pivot from this to around the NBA, but it's good. I'm gonna ask you another personal, deeply personal question tomorrow, and I'll just surprise you at a given moment. We're gonna go around the NBA a little bit. So last night I'm watching OKC play Phoenix. Phoenix looked really good to start. Nurkic was grabbing all the rebounds, 12 rebounds in the first quarter. You know, they have KD, they have Bradley Beal. Devin Booker wasn't available to play. Seems like he's going to be out for about like 2 weeks or something like that. But in any case, Phoenix is rolling. They're playing well. And then OKC just like turns it on, and Shea turns it on, and Chet starts going, and Jalen Williams starts going. And of course, they win again. OKC is once again a top in the Western Conference by half a game over Minnesota and also over top of Denver, who also won. I guess my question to you is just like, OKC is the best young team since which team? Top of your mind.
Maybe since like OKC.
The last OKC team?
Yeah, you could probably make that argument. I think they got to get real about Josh Giddey, though. Like, yeah. I thought, this is what I disagreed with about OKC. I'm going to take over this segment. But, like, I really disagreed with, like, Gordon Hayward gives them some attempt of, like, a swing at upside. I get what they're trying to do. But they did it without risking anything.
Yeah.
And, like, Shea is an MVP candidate.
Yeah.
I understand, like, their front court just got obliterated by Nurkic. Like, he had, what, 31 rebounds?
Yeah.
You know, like, 9 of those were missed tap-ins. But that still leaves 22.
That is right? Nurkic. Yeah, he sucks around the rim somehow. I don't get it. Anyway.
Well, if that's always like guys who aren't 6'11" are always like, man, I feel like I would kick ass. Or I can't curse.
That's fine.
Anyway, my apologies. But anyway, I feel like I would do well if I were that big around the rim. But basically, I thought that they should have gone for it. And because you only have so many years where like the guys are really good. Like Jalen Williams is good enough to be a starter on a championship level team. Chet, I guess we'll see if he can hold down the front court in this run, but who knows? But SGA is definitely like MVP level guy.
He's so good.
You should have gone for it. Because these guys are so good that like they give you an opportunity. Every year there's, I guess that's like the Daryl Morey thing. If you have 5%, you go for it. But like really, I thought that they were too passive at the deadline. And I think that like the catch and hold stuff with Josh is really going to come back to bite them, honestly, during the playoffs. But
well, there were the clips that went around of, like, they were basically, like, leaving him wide open and completely ignoring him. There's one where Nurkic was guarding him, saw him, and just kind of turned around. Almost like Scottie Barnes style. We see Scottie sometimes just wave at a guy and be like, all right, I'm not closing on you. Except with in the case of Giddey, it's absolutely the right thing to do. Yeah. I just don't – yeah, it's just not – it's not that serious until they play him. I mean, you saw some bitch might be on, but, like, I'm curious, too, in terms of just how OKC is going to do in the first run. But I don't know. The sneaking suspicion for me that, like – they're not going to do that well in their first run with this group in a playoff series, 7-game playoff series. And I don't know where that comes from for me. I don't know if you share that same skepticism about OKC.
I think because everybody assumes somebody won't do something until they do it.
Like, okay, sure. Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
That's like that was the same thing with like Golden State. Everybody's like, oh, Golden State will not win this year. And they won. And like there's sure some injury stuff or whatever, but they did win. And basically like, the NBA, what happens as far as, like, the consensus or opinions on it is, like, once somebody proves they do something, that becomes the prevailing narrative of, like, how you achieve things. So, like, currently, like, the Nuggets are the winners until they don't win. Mm-hmm. And, like, why would you have any other position besides, like, the Nuggets are the best team and they're going to win? And we've seen their style of play won in 2023. Mm-hmm. Someone else has to prove that a different style can do it in 2024. And even with OKC, it's not necessarily that you expect them to be champions, but, like, some people might be like, oh, this could be a first round out. And
let's
a lot
say
of people
play the Lakers in the first round. Like, would you pick OKC against the Lakers?
I'll pick OKC, yeah.
Like confidently?
Confidently. Okay. I'll do that right now. The hypothetical series. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm on OKC. But that is like that's like momentum inertia of LeBron James versus like the guys who are really good right now. Mm-hmm. And people are like, we've seen it from LeBron as like the overdog and the underdog.
Yeah.
So let's just expect to see that again. And, like, Shea hasn't been, like, the star of a playoff series yet, I guess. But I don't know. I hate waving away 82 games.
Yeah, for sure. No, totally.
Even though it's different. I know, like, UNS and Danny Green had a bit of a conversation about, like, how different is playoff basketball. I get it. But, like, if a team is really good in the regular season, I feel inclined to give them a bit of a go. So that's how I feel about OKC. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Herring at ESPN wrote a really nice piece about OKC this year and just kind of drew a little bit of comparison, actually, to the Warriors back then. Actually, the 7-3 win Warriors, which is kind of nuts. But the stats kind of speak for themselves, and this is from Chris's piece. At 39.6%, the Thunder shoot the three better than any other team. And with a 56.7 effective field goal rate, they recently pulled ahead of the 73-win 2015-2016 Warriors, who had held the best mark in the shot-tracking era, according to ESPN Stats and Info. Much like Golden State, they rarely run pick-and-roll sets despite being the most efficient team in the league when they do so. Instead, they have a lot of their guards do the dirty work similar to the Dubs. And he went on to describe a lot of what OKC does, which is have guards set screens. And, you know, since we have you here, why is it now that teams are figuring out more and more that, A, you can screen with other people other than bigs, and B, why is it so particularly effective for certain teams like OKC when they use their guards to set these screens?
So the big thing that everyone will understand really quickly that's really easy is, like, if you're a big man, or if you're anybody who isn't Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, is like, check.
Mm-hmm.
Guarding him is insane.
Yeah.
Like, how do you possibly do that? And guards, if you're going to, guards typically sit above the break in relation to the ball handler, which means that teams don't get to pre-switch. So a lot of what happened was, like, when teams were playing the Warriors and they wanted to put Steph Curry in a pick and roll, what Draymond Green would do, he'd be positioned closer to above the break. If they're trying to pull somebody from the corner, Draymond would push them out of the action and he'd go occupy the pick and roll as a defender. Mm-hmm. When you bring, like, a guard from one spot over, there's no opportunity for pre-switch. So you can control for the isolation that comes after the screen more readily. And then also, guards are typically better shooters than bigs. And getting guards loose is really easy to do if you're, like, ghosting a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Because a ghosted screen creates tension for the defenders that they, like, freeze up because the screening is about to happen. Whereas the ghosting screener has an opportunity to, like, take that hesitation and burst into open space where they can be really dangerous as a shooter. I know Isaiah Joe is, like, popping. He's having a really great season doing a lot of that for the Thunder. So those are the two big things. And you can get into, like, a lot more of the minutia of, like, identifying certain matchups. And also, like, some guys like Jalen Williams, for example, who is a guard screener, is really, really good at navigating the lane as a cutter. And what we talked about at the top of the show with Ochai creating that seal, slipping into the lane, like, Jalen Williams is one of the best at that in the league and has been since he's a rookie. So, and he's also comfortable short rolling and, like, playmaking as a short roller to see both corners to make, like, a lay down. So they have a lot of players, and Mark Daigneault has just done, like, a tremendous job coaching that team. It's, they're fun. They're great.
Yeah.
They're going to beat the Lakers in the hypothetical series.
No, I think the Lakers argument in this hypothetical is, like, all right, they have so much size and they put pressure on you with LeBron and AD, and
right,
depending on how the game's going to be officiated, you might foul out a couple key players. And, you know, I mean, again, like, I saw Bismack Biyombo in the game last night, and I'm like, oh yeah, he does play for OKC, you know, like, you might have to see a lot more of that. But I think the flip side is they make it so difficult to guard against them, and that Lakers team feels old, feels creaky to me, the way the Nuggets move off the ball. Whatever, the Nuggets are reigning champions, but every time they play the Nuggets, I'm like, yeah, there's a certain level where they just reach a point where, like, you know, they look really good, they look really threatening, they huff and puff, and then, like, when it comes down to it, there are clearly classes of teams much better than them. And of course the Nuggets beat them over the weekend. That was a classic example of that, and I think a similar effect would happen with OKC. I'd probably pick OKC as well, but that series might give them a more trouble than you would anticipate. I mean, you know,
there's that tweet, the one where it's like, LeBron is 30 years old, this won't go on for much longer.
Yeah,
it's been going on. I do wonder when it stops. Like, can you make that tweet when he's 40?
I think people are actually, like, actively looking forward to that. Someone has it in their drafts for sure. You know how thirsty Twitter is these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. We won't talk about the other trending Twitter topic that took place over the weekend. Something else that took place over the weekend, Boston beat Golden State by 52 points. So a couple stats on this. Boston, this is their second win by 50 or more points in their last six games. They also beat the Nets by 50 points before the All-Star break. The Celtics, in their last six games, have won by an average of 29.8 points. They're smacking teams by 30 a game, and they smacked the Warriors last night by 52. Yeah, I mean, it basically wasn't close. And, you know, it was actually kind of interesting because Draymond mentioned after the game, he's like, yeah, you know, we were essentially had the strategy of just ignoring Jaylen Brown, and we decided about this about 15 minutes before the game. We're like, hey, why don't we just try leaving Jaylen Brown wide open? And this got me thinking, Samson, like, what's, like, the wackiest, weirdest, like, I guess, scheme or decision that you've seen in a game this year, Raptors or not Raptors related? Because to me, I was just like, Josh Giddey, leave him wide open? Fine. Absolutely. Other players? Yeah, fine. Jaylen Brown, wide open the whole game? Like, yeah, it clearly didn't work. That's not the only reason why they won by 50, but clearly it got the Warriors down 20 points right away.
Yeah, I think that probably takes the cake for the most, like, interesting wrinkle I've ever seen. there's a lot of unique stuff that happens with Luka that triggered like this screen your own action that the Mavericks have as a response. Is like they did so much pre-switching and so much switch to blitz that the Mavericks, instead of having the guy who's coming to set the screen Luka's guy, he would screen his own guy who's already triggering a switch. So like there's like lots of like back and forth between the teams, and Luka, the best players always create like these really unique responses. Jaylen Brown isn't the best player, but he's like an all-star level player. He obviously went nuts with that opportunity and was like posting about it. He's posting his W's. He's like, yeah, you guys should do that all the time. I'm a rock star right now.
Yeah.
Especially after a tough dunk contest. It was a good like get back for him. But I think that probably is the craziest I've seen. And then prior to that, you know, we talked about Josh Giddey being a guy who you can get away with that stuff. But last year, seeing like Indiana and that like 6-game run against Scotty, where, you know, Scotty's obviously popped off as a shooter considerably since then, but teams started playing like in the restricted area.
Yeah, yeah.
That was crazy.
They're giving the Ben Simmons treatment, basically.
Even this year when the Raptors played Boston in the in-season tournament in Toronto, when they almost, like, the Raptors were close.
Yeah.
But in the first game when they got shellacked, what Porzingis was standing in the restricted area against Jakob and was just like, if anybody wants the rim, I will be here. And Jakob was like, I don't know how to navigate this space.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I don't want to take 14 8-foot push shots.
I would love to see that, man. Jakob, drop a triple-double with just push shots.
And it was funny. You know, I asked Joe Mazzulla, you see it like kind of get aggregated that he's like maybe sometimes a tough question and a tough answer. But when he's here, I asked him about that. I was like, you guys played like really deep drop. What was going on? He's like, no, we played that all the time. I was like, Joe, you do not put Porzingis in the restricted area the time. But he wouldn't give me an inch.
Yeah.
I was hoping to figure out more there. But, yeah, unique defense creates unique offensive responses if there's trouble. Yeah. And sometimes it just creates jump shots.
One that is always going to stick with me is a couple years ago when Harden was MVP level when he came to Toronto. And I think maybe this was either the championship year or the year afterwards. Obviously, Nick was coaching. And he was just like, yeah, I'm going to trap Harden on half court. He's going to walk past half, and a second guy is just – he's not even doing anything. He's just bringing the ball up with his beard and his wine, and they're boom. Instantly, he crosses half, and he's trapped. And they chose to play the whole game 4-on-3 defensively, or 3-on-4 defensively. And they didn't win, mostly because Ben McLemore hit, like, 7 threes.
Yes.
But I just thought it was like, you know what? There's so many of these games. There's 82 games. Honestly, a lot of them are fungible. Like, past tomorrow, how many people are going to remember Raptors Hornets? Probably not, right? At least use some of them to be a little creative and just think it through and give me like a little bit of experimentation. Like, I'm not expecting you to just do, like, I mean, I don't want you to lose by 52 like the Warriors did last night, but I appreciate at least when people think about it and try something, even if it doesn't work out. So,
yeah, I think interesting defense is always interesting, especially from like the third party. I know Raptors fans were a bit fed up with like the exaggerated rotations of the Nurse era. Raptors, but other teams, like, it's no wonder that, like, if a reporter kind of steps in and starts looking at the Raptors, they're like, hey, this is cool.
Yeah.
You guys notice what's happening here? It's cool to be, like, not there witnessing it, but to be able to, like, kind of, like, hover over and check in on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find.
I hear that. Also, the defense has gone off has been much worse since Nick has left. But, I mean, hey, listen, that's a separate conversation. A team with a much better defense right now is the Milwaukee Bucks. I know this has been so much discussion about Doc Rivers and All-Star Weekend. That doesn't really help himself when he like gives some of the press conferences, some of the quotes, things that came out about him, the JJ Redick thing. But the number one reason the Bucks brought in Doc Rivers is they wanted to bring a better defensive effort out of their group. And we have now seen the Bucks hold 4 straight games of their opponents under 100 points. And they have done that 6 out of the last 9 games. So do you buy this new defense from Milwaukee?
I think, yeah, to some degree. You have to see larger sample sizes, of course, because the Raptors, you know, we watched the Raptors team for the, like, the past 3 years have, like, really good 2 months, really terrible month, and then, like, okay 2 months. And then that was a season, and you end up ranked 11th or something like that. I'm not sure exactly to buy it or not, but I know that the Bucks have the talent to be like better than they have been on that end.
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff can come down to like effort, and not just effort, but effort in like holding hands with intention. And sometimes you can have effort without intention, you can have an intention without effort, but like the Bucks just being able to like play in scheme more often and like simplify things and let their big defensive playmakers kind of eat, I think is a really important step for them. And that might not be something that makes them a championship winning team. Because like championship,
ironically, winning, they're kind of going back to what they did before. But
championship winning defenses typically are quite diverse. We had Marc Gasol hedging, you know, Steph Curry above the break. It was incredible, man.
How was he doing, man? 300-pound, 7-footer, just like well above the 3-point arc against Steph Curry.
Met the moment. Active hands. But I don't know if that changes like the ceiling for the Bucks, but it certainly it changes the short term. I've been impressed with them, but I don't know. Probably going to have to see more of it and against like a more diverse set of teams.
I was going to say, yeah, they've done this against the Chicago Bulls, the Charlotte Hornets, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Denver Nuggets, which is awesome. That was a really good win for them. Probably their best of the year. And then again against the Charlotte Hornets. So three of those six games are against the Charlotte Hornets, which, you know, they only had 106 against the Raptors last night. So I do expect that from the Bucks. But I don't know. I guess I'm not a Doc Rivers defender, but I did feel like everyone like immediately jumped off on Doc. And I was like, dude, he's been there for 2 weeks. They have problems beyond Doc right now. And you might not agree with him being the Detroit. And it's easy to get jokes off about a guy, but like at least let him coach a little bit. Like let him blow the 3-1 lead before we kill him for blowing 3-1 leads. That's
I think that's just what it is, though. It's like if the red carpet has been rolled out, like you're the jokes guy.
Yeah.
You're the jokes guy. How you?
Yeah, like you're right.
The return from being the jokes guy. I don't even know if I've ever seen somebody walk that path.
What, come back from it?
From being the jokes guy? Have you ever seen that?
That's a good question. I think like people will like ease off on joking about a guy after a while. Like it just gets old. Like Westbrook, I feel like when he was with the Lakers, like it was like a joke all the time.
It's too much.
And then they lay off. I mean, Ben Simmons, to a degree, people have also laid off. But it's also like in Simmons' case, he stopped playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing else to really say about it other than just like, okay, I guess he hasn't proven us wrong. And then in the case of Westbrook, it was like he went to a different situation, expectations changed, all of a sudden people were okay with the way he played.
Paul George was a jokes guy.
Yeah.
He's not as much a jokes guy.
But why was Paul George a jokes guy again? I don't really understand that.
Because everyone pretended like he was bad in the playoffs, even though he wasn't.
He really wasn't. Have you seen, okay, 2016 Raptors, Paul George was terrifying. He was terrifying, man. He was terrifying, man.
He's been incredible for forever.
He single-handedly carried Solomon Hill to Game 7, man.
He beat the Jazz without Kawhi.
Yeah.
Like, and that was a good Jazz team.
Yeah.
And just because he didn't beat the Suns, like, tough. I don't know. Everybody on that Clippers team was injured. Paul George rocks so hard, and I'm so sick of people pretending like he doesn't.
Mm.
Yeah.
Damn. So who are the number one jokes guys now in the league? It's not going to be about Scottie anymore, I'll tell you that much.
No.
Yes.
No. There's definitely, I don't know who, like, I feel like it's
Jordan
related.
Poole.
Jordan Poole is a big jokes guy.
Jordan Poole.
But
there's certain guys where I'm like, they don't make it easy on themselves. Jordan Poole is absolutely that for me, man.
It's the intermingling of the off-court stuff a lot of times now. Like, Michael Jordan didn't have to be, like, have people, like, cracking, like, parlay jokes under his tweets or, like, his highlight.
Right.
But he would have if social media existed. Whereas, like, guys who participate in, like, illicit activities off-court and are maybe not paying the, like, societal punishment that like regular people do.
Yeah, Miles Bridges,
for
example.
Quick to come up. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, they should. It should be brought up at certain points. Like if they're allowed to still be employed and they're still put in this like spotlight, then people end up talking about what they do. And rightfully so, because I was not happy to see him on the court last night for a variety of reasons. But all right. I was going to ask you who's the number two team in the East, but we only got 90 seconds. Is it the Bucks?
Yeah, let it be the Bucks. Sure.
All right. I mean, they're literally the number two seed right now in the East. But all of a sudden, like, Cleveland cooled off a little bit. The Knicks got so banged up that, like, Deuce McBride played 47 minutes and 13 seconds off the bench last night. And I know Brunson got hurt in early, and he's their only other point guard. But, like,
if other teams
47
were healthy,
and 30 minutes off the bench is a record, man.
Yeah. Like, if other teams were healthy, it might be a conversation. Yeah. But, honestly, we're talking about a 76ers team that was really awesome, but then Embiid got injured and is probably out for the rest of the season. The Knicks were awesome.
Yeah.
They were doing what the Celtics have been doing lately, is just bludgeoning every single team, but they had a million injuries in succession.
Right.
And, you know.
And now it's just Josh Hart grabbing 20 rebounds a game as they grind out wins, and they did it again last night. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but the West is so much better than the East right now. Anyway, that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, and please rate and review the show. Big thanks to our producer, Amit Mon, our producer, Derek Rendell, Jennifer Malik, David Sis, Jared Manitat, helping behind the scenes. Thanks to our guest, Savannah Hamilton, and, of course, Samson Folk. I will talk to Samson tomorrow.